You can sit with us podcast with Lexi B.
Founder of Change Coaches and author of Leading Below the Surface, LaTanya Wilkins coaches CEOs, senior executives, and teams around the world. Global leaders typically call LaTanya when they are facing the following challenges: creating psychologically safe teams, improving connections across differences, effectively coaching their team to create accountability and trust, and building sustainable cultures of belonging. LaTanya is a sought-after coach and keynote speaker who has inspired audiences across industries. She built her career with HR, talent management, and learning and development at Fortune 500 companies before teaching and taking on progressive leadership roles at the University of Illinois Geese College of Business. LaTanya's best-selling book, Leading Below the Surface, How to Build Real and Psychologically Safe Relationships with People Who Are Different from You, was recently featured as a top inclusion book for executives on SeniorExecutive.com. LaTanya was also recognized as an excellent instructor by her undergraduate and MBA students. LaTanya has been featured in publications such as Fast Company, The Los Angeles Times, NPR, and Inc. Magazine.
You can sit with us podcast with Lexi B.
Welcome, LaTanya. How are you?
I'm great. It's so wonderful to see you.
I know. And before we get started, I think we should tell the people how we met, because it is a wild story. Would you like to tell this story?
Yeah, I'll tell it, because I probably will. It's funny, because even my wife will be like, she'll tell me I don't tell stories accurately, but especially the how we met story very accurately, because we still are very divergent on how that went. But anyways, we met at a women in tech conference in Poland, in Warsaw, Poland. And I remember, okay, so I don't know if I ever tell you this, but this is how I describe you to other people. So I walked into, it was like a trade show kind of setup. There are a lot of different companies there.
Yeah.
And I saw the only other Black girl that I'd seen the whole time sitting down. And I was like, who's this girl? So I went over and I started talking to you. And I remember there are a few things I'll always remember about our conversation. Number one, it was extremely inclusive. Like, you were just like, yeah, you know, I told you, I remember we were talking about queer Black people, intersectionality, and you were just so inclusive and just really great about that. I think the second thing was, let's find the other Black people here. We ended up finding everybody else that was there.
Yes.
And I think the third thing was learning that you're from St. Louis.
Yeah.
And so, like, one of the Blackest towns here in the U.S. So I was... That was fun to see. One of the Blackest towns in the Midwest, I should say.
I remember like seeing you across the room, and in my head, I was like, there's another Black person in Warsaw, Poland, in the middle of winter. Because I remember it was November and it was just cold. And I distinctly remember leaving the airport. So folks, for you don't know, the airport in Warsaw is in the middle of nowhere. And when it's in the winter and it's pitch black, you really feel like you're in the Chronicles of Narnia in the middle of nowhere. And some like half elfin, you know, half human horse person is going to come out of a bush. Like, you are in the middle of nowhere and there's like 8 feet of snow everywhere. And I remember going to this conference and it was like no Black people. And then there was LaTanya. And when you have not many people that look like you in a room of what, like 4,000, you stand out. And I was like, oh, we're going to be friends.
Yeah. I was almost scared, remember? Because I had to do a talk. There was this, it was wild. There was, for folks listening, there was this, like, I did two talks. One was like a TED style, and then the other was like closed. Yeah. And it was down this big corridor. I remember we had to go to this elevator. It was like the secret room, and it was like all these queer people were in there. And I was like, I don't know. Is this safe for me to be talking about this? Is it safe for me to be out? And it was such a wild conference, but I was glad that they actually offered that space, because remember, some people were in tears, right? It was such an interesting experience.
Well, I remember that they asked me to be part of that, and then they kind of got offended because I was like, but I'm not queer.
Right.
We want you to come. And I was like, I'm not queer. So I forgot what I said, because it was definitely on the fly. But I remember I started with, as a non-queer person, queer people are great. And I just kind of riffed it. But yeah, let's put it this way. I am glad that I took the invite to this conference.
Oh, you were an epic ally. Like I think that's why they asked you to come. Yeah.
I don't know.
And even when you spoke up there, I was like, wow. Yeah. So I think you underestimate yourself. Aww. Like I remember when I joined Sister Circle, and this is another story I told about you, but I remember being in there and someone was saying something homophobic, or they said something that involved colorism, and you just shut it down. And again, I think in a lot of like all Black spaces, sometimes that doesn't happen, right? And you were always just like, nah, I'm not putting up with any transphobia, homophobia, any of that stuff in here. And if that's you, don't just get out. And so I always had like an abundance of respect.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, until all of us are free, none of us are free.
Right. Right.
And
right.
And also what I love to tell people as well is, you know, Black people be gay.
Right.
Will be gay, are currently gay, have been gay. So this whole concept of,
right,
especially in Black only circles, that queerness is an issue is very wild to me, because I'm just like, but if it wasn't for Black queer bodies,
no.
Nobody would be free, and or I don't think we're 100% free, but nobody would have the little bit of freedom they have.
Yeah, right.
In this room. Right. And that's how I was raised. So like, power to the Black queer people, especially power to the Black trans women, because Lord knows. But let's get into it. So what is in your coffee cup? What you drinking with us tonight?
Well, I don't really have anything right now, but I would say if I did have a coffee cup, it would be espresso with this milk. It's called Ripple Milk. So I don't know if many of you, it's a pea protein.
What is Ripple Milk?
So for those, if you know, you know, right?
Clearly, because I don't.
It's a, okay, so I can't, most of us, most Black people, we can't process lactose. So there's, you know, you could do oat milk, almond milk, but then there's also a better milk that's actually, it's got protein in it, and it's called Ripple. And it's a pea protein milk. And so I steam that, and I have it in my coffee every morning and with my espresso. And it's, you know, I think you either love or hate the taste of it. I don't notice, but it's, to me, it tastes kind of like almond milk. It doesn't taste like oat milk, because oat milk is sweeter. Mm-hmm. But that's one of my favorite drinks. So my second favorite drink would be matcha lattes. I love matcha. I love green tea lattes.
I do love the matcha.
Green
teas. Oh, yes. That's my thing. Yeah. And I will drink it hot or cold. I have no preference in the matcha green tea family.
Well, you got to try the Ripple Milk. It's in a big blue jug.
Is this a regular grocery store, or is this like in like some like Whole Foods-y sexy granola grocery store that sells it like $12 for a liter? Like, LaTanya, where are you?
What do you think? You're not even have to answer that question.
See, now I'm going to go to my local grocery store this weekend and be like, do you have Ripple Milk? To see what they think.
Yeah, they won't know what that. Well, I mean, almond milk is just, I mean, it didn't get, it just had a little bit more protein than almond milk.
Okay. So I love it. And where are your people from?
Yeah, so my people, this is always an emotional story to tell. So they're from Jackson, Mississippi, and then rural Arkansas. So my dad's side is from rural Arkansas. My mom's side is from Jackson, Mississippi. My grandmother migrated in the 1950s when my mother refused to drink from a colored fountain. So they started, they came up, and she had one sandwich. She always talks about that. She didn't eat the whole way. And they ended up in, first of all, Topeka, Kansas, and then Des Moines, Iowa. So I grew up in Iowa. That's why I grew up in Iowa. It is because my grandma was trying to get away from having her kid bled. So don't give me anything about, I don't want to hear anything about that. Cause like every person that is not from the Midwest, whenever I say that, when I tell them I'm from Iowa, I think you even looked at me like, Lexi, like you are afraid for me. Like something was going to happen to me. You needed to protect me. But there are Black people there. And we actually had a really strong group of elders. And when I go back there now as an adult, I'm like, man, we were lucky because like everybody was your cousin, you know, and they're very strong group of elders that would take care of me and after school. Cause you know, we didn't have a lot. So my mom would be working. Mm-hmm. So, and I would go to one of the elders' houses. Mm. So,
So you were just born into this militancy, right? Think about it, like to be a child of a woman who was like, I'm not drinking out of this segregated fountain. I guess pack your bag. I'm not going to be here. Right. But then also more importantly, to be the grandchild of two people who bore this militant child and then acted upon it, I think is also very deep, right? Because, you know, many times kids do things and parents are like, whatever. But to be born of a militant child who was born of militant parents, who I'm sure when she came home and said that, your grandfather was like, somebody pack the coat and the cast iron skillet because we out, right? I think that's very deep and very, very profound. So you are a coach. You have been in academic settings. You have been in corporate settings. You have done all the things. And today I want to talk to you about how to find your life's purpose, which is a very, very difficult thing to do. I think, which is a very, very transformative thing to do and a scary thing to do, which is why I think a lot of people have not done the work to do it. So my question to you before we get started is, have you finished the work of figuring out what your life's purpose is?
I think it's an ongoing, that's a really good question. It's an ongoing effort. I have a pretty good view. I at least have some guardrails, but I think the big thing is just leaving the world in a better place. You know, when I'm done, I think my grandmother really created a life for me in a way that modeled how I want to be in life. And she was just so spiritually centered and never panicked and just had this amazing wisdom and all of those qualities. I was in tears recently because someone's like, you're just like her. And it's just like, that's just the utmost compliment. And so, it's being wise. It's being in those spaces. It's helping people, you know, build real relationships across differences. And it's doing that in a way that's not censoring me or myself, which I did a lot of censoring of myself in my younger years, especially my younger career years. Like even today, I had an interview for something. It was a big, it's something really big, but it's a very prestigious thing on paper. But I was telling my partner, like, you know, I got to decide if it's something I want to do, because if it's anything where I have to hide any parts of myself or I have to conform, I can't do it. I just can't, like, I at this point in my life. And so that's, first of all, it's an ongoing effort. It's an ongoing journey. But I think if you could even start to find the guardrails, your life will be so much.
So what I hear you say is that part of finding your life's purpose is really digging into your authenticity. And I think that authenticity is so interesting. Number one, people use this word. It's very, you know, a few years ago, authenticity was like bell bottoms. It was really in, like the bell bottoms in the 70s, right? It was really in. And people would use this word all the time on stages and in papers and in mission statements. And it would drive me nuts because we'd have people who'd use the word, but then would be too afraid to actually action the word. And then would also oppress people who were trying to action it. I will be the first person to say that the older I get, the more authentic I become. I think it's also a healthy dose, LaTanya, is like the older I get, I'm very much like F around and find out. You know, you the older you get, you're just like, don't care. At some point, I'm gonna die. So here it is, right? But I want to go deeper into that with you. Why was it so difficult when you were younger to possibly be more authentic?
My dad actually worked in a meat packing plant. And my parents met at a bowling alley in a smaller town in Iowa called Marshalltown. And so it was very white town. Again, we had great elders. My dad's brothers lived there. So I was always the only Black kid. I just never, you know, on weekends I wasn't. During the week I was, right? Like, And then, you know, as I got older, I realized I was queer. And I just don't think my family was ready for that. I think they knew, but my Grandma Ruthie was always ready for it. And Grandma Ruthie was always waiting to help me, you know.
Well, LaTanya, you know the grandmamas always know.
I know.
Let's just shout out to the Black women elders. They always know.
Yeah.
Shout out to Ruthie. Ruthie was like, y'all really go act like you didn't know? Okay, pass the cornbread. Right. We're not doing this. We're not doing this today.
Yeah. So I think that was a big thing. It was, just having that, and then having to, you know, as I got older and as I was in more and more Black spaces, and it was really fighting my self and voice as a Black queer woman, and that was hard, especially again, like when you're raised in that kind of background that I was raised in, and then again your family's just not ready for it, and it just took them a while, and so I think I kind of carried that around. I carried that around at work. I didn't tell anyone, and I kept everything to myself until I finally did it. And that was probably, 10 years into my career, I was finally like, I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. Yeah.
I think for me, the moment that I decided to be my most authentic self, as much as I could in capitalism, okay, was the day that Mike Brown died. Because I was a semi-new college grad. I think I was 3 years into my career at the same company. And I remember in all the, you know, y'all, this is pre-COVID, so we had to go into the office. All of the micro kitchens had TVs where they would show the news.
Oh.
And it was all over about Mike Brown. And as a person who's also from St. Louis, and I carry that with me very publicly, so everybody knew that I was from St. Louis. No one said one thing to me. And I thought it was very interesting. This is what, 2015 or something like that? That I'm being crucified at work, whether or not the white people would say it, but I'm being crucified at work. I am being challenged at work because I'm this young Black girl in a room of white faces. And we all know how that works. But I'm still playing the game with them. I'm still trying to act like them. I'm still, you know, not like on purposely not being myself, even a few layers. And here this Black boy is on every news screen for 2 weeks, getting shot like hunting season from my city, where he was shot. My dad told me that it's like two blocks away from where my dad bought his first car, right, when he was 16. And people are still treating me the exact same way. So I think I had this moment, you know, at that young age where I was like, well, I'm damned if I do and I'm damned if I don't. And so if I'm going to be damned, I'm going to do it my way.
Right.
So my question for you is, what are your tips and tricks? How does one actually start navigating their purpose, or at least trying to figure it out? I think it's so easy to walk around and say, find your purpose, fam. But how does one do that?
Yeah. So I'm a coach. And so we like to ask provocative questions to get people to think about certain things. And so I would say, like, one of the questions that I would reflect on, and I know this is uplifting stuff, but like, let's think about the state of the world right now. But, you know, as I was watching like The Last of Us and all these different things, it's like, I would ask people is, oh, okay. The question I would ask people is, what would you do in an apocalypse? Like what role would you play? Would you be the soldier? Would you be the preacher? Would you be the therapist? Would you be, you know, what would you do? Would you be someone that, you know, hunted? Would you be a gardener? And I think just starting there and just knowing what role you would migrate towards when we aren't in a noisy world that's telling us to do things that we really don't want to do. And so just first of all, asking yourself that question and just seeing where that goes. And I think after that, it's really trying to, one of the steps I took is I kind of wrote down all the things that I had done in my career and all like the high points and the low points. And I was able to see that, you know, the legacy that I would, what I would want to leave and how I want to be remembered. And that's a good question to ask yourself. And the way I would want to be remembered is, are those things. I want to be remembered as someone that was wise. I'd want to be remembered as someone that guided people through difficult situation. I'd want to be that person that was a good friend. I'd want to be that person that really helped people connect across differences. And those are the things. It's like, again, ask yourself, how do you want to be remembered? And number two, you know, what would you do if the world were ending, like, and there's an apocalypse? Like, what would be your role in the village? And those are two areas or two spaces to start with.
I've never thought about that, my role in the apocalypse. I can say that I've thought about what Harry Potter house I'm in, and shout out to all the Potterheads. And I also want to just have a note here that Harry Potter is for trans people, despite all this TERF stuff. It's for trans kids too. I am a Gryffindor with a rising Hufflepuff moon. And so I think what that translates to is I'm probably one of those soldiers. And now I need to sit back and process to what that means in my purpose in life. But I think that I'm naturally a fighter. So what does that mean for my purpose?
So you'd be on the front line. You think you'd be on the front lines, right?
I wouldn't say all that. I am not a non-strategic thug fighter.
Okay.
I'm a strategic fighter.
Yeah.
Like, I'm more of like Harry Potter, Hermione vibes. Like, yeah. I'm not about to be out here doing dumb stuff just to do dumb stuff.
Right.
But I can be in the background. Like, I can be the general and be like, make a left at the light.
That's what I was about to say. You could be the general.
Yes.
And
yes.
You'd be, yep.
But no, I frankly do not believe that I should be in the front line as a Black person in America. I don't think any Black person should be at the front line. We did that for free, even though we didn't want to. So no. And also, I would have to know what I'm fighting for, because I'm not about to lay my life on the line, LaTanya, for some stupid ish.
I'd be the gardener. I'd be the person that's getting the gardens together. I'd probably also just be a coach and help people, you know, mentally, like help them with their mental health. But yeah, those are the places I'd migrate towards. I don't know, the fighting stuff. It's not really for me.
Yeah, I don't know. See now I have to think about this. Okay, I have to process this, and I'm gonna text you and be like, this is what I'm gonna be. Right now, I think I'm more of a general vibe.
Right.
But
right.
Let me take some time to think. I do not want to sign up for things, y'all, for the apocalypse that I am not prepared for. let's not put that in writing yet. Okay, cool. So once we establish what our role is, let me take that back. How do we establish what our role is? How do you know innately that you are a gardener? What traits does that show for you? Because I think what you're saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that it's really about really understanding who you are as a person, good, bad, or indifferent.
Oh, yeah.
And then kind of slithering into that role, not based on what you want to be, but really who you are to the core.
Right.
That you've always been.
Yeah. What's your purpose is? Like, what can you provide? Like, what benefit can you provide to society, right? Like, what value can you, and we all need to be providing value to society, especially looking at, and this is a mess. And so how are we, and I would say, I know I'm a gardener because you have to see my living room. I mean, plants I have. And it's funny because when my family comes over, they're like, you're just like your great grandma. That's great to hear. Grand-gran, we used to call her grand-gran. And so I hear that I'm just like her. But yeah, it's just that, I really have a connection. I'm a big camper. I'm also a Black person that camps and hikes and loves that. And I have a big connection to the earth, right? And so I know that that's where I would be. And I would feed you soldiers, right? I would cook for the soldiers. I would be doing the mental health. And it's like, so everybody think about that. Like, what value can you add to society, right? Like, and it doesn't have to be the value that your company's telling you to add. It's like, again, if you didn't have to, like, you know, work 60 hours a week and just to get a paycheck at, you know, X tech company or whatever, like, what would you be doing? Like, and again, that's what I'm asking here is, what does that really look like?
And it's interesting because I think that one of the reasons why it's so difficult for us as people, and I'm speaking very generally, to answer this question is that we've been trained since birth to conform to capitalism.
Right, right.
Capitalism doesn't ask you, what is your life purpose? Right. Capitalism asks you, can you do the job that I'm presenting to you? And if you can, let's negotiate a price for payment.
And it's like, you know, I run a business. So every day it's like, you know, for those of you that run a business, I run a leadership development firm. So it's like some of those are, yeah, they're very aligned. And some are like, okay, I just gotta get these coins, like with some of these. And that's what they want you to do, right? And you got to survive. And so it's even hard to think about, even for me. I mean, I know, but it's not like you could live that every day. And it's like, if you're not living it every day, you're right. Like, how do you get acquainted with it?
What inspired you, encouraged you, pushed you to leave the corporate world to start your own business?
Oh my gosh. How much time do we have?
How authentic do you want to be in this moment, LaTanya?
So I will tell a story, and this is a more personal podcast than I'm used to, but I'm going to tell you a story. And so when I was in my first job at a business school, I lost my big and only sister. And one day she just died. Like, one day she was here and the next day she wasn't. And she ended up having an aneurysm in her head, and nobody knew. I mean, she had high blood pressure. And I will, Lexi, when I was going through that and I went back to work, it was like, I got a week of bereavement leave. A week. I got a week of bereavement leave. I remember I was working for a large company at the time. I won't say the name of it. But they, first of all, just getting a week of leave, and then I remember talking to one of my managers about it, and that just was, you just need to get over it. And, you know, this is, and then like the next time I talked to someone, they're like, and this is when I was out the door, they're like, you could have taken time off. You could have taken leave. And I'm like, unpaid leave? So that was like my first thought. When I was like, this is not for me. But I still stayed in corporate for quite a while. The second warning was when I was working for this other company and was loving my job, doing great stuff. I was called in. They were like, "Oh, you're not doing a good job." And it was just, it was like I walked into like a performance nightmare. And it was like, I had no idea. And I was so strong in that situation. And I'm really, when I go back and I look at my younger self, I'm really proud of my younger self, because in that meeting, I just listened. I was just like channeling my grandma Ruthie. And I was like, I'm not letting them do this to me. I'm not letting them do this to me. I'm not. And so after that, I went and worked in higher ed, and I taught, and I did some research, and I like culture and leadership. And then I was like, okay, I can make a bigger difference outside of an organization and my own organization than I can within one. And so that's when that started. It kicked off with losing my sister, a tragedy. And even when I lost my mom, it was kind of, again, what's up with these companies with these 1 week of bereavement leave? Like, what the heck?
You know, and as you were talking about your sister, I was thinking, so, you know, Sheryl Sandberg.
Yeah, yeah.
And Sheryl Sandberg's been very open and honest about this, and I appreciate her candor in this subject, was that, so Sheryl Sandberg tragically lost her first husband in an unexpected situation. He wasn't sick in that kind of thing. She lost her husband. And she wrote a book about it, about that grief. And it was because of her losing her husband that the Facebook rules and policies changed about bereavement.
That's awesome.
It's awesome. My issue with it, though, because we're going to go there, is that it had to take someone as high ranking as Sheryl Sandberg to have that type of tragedy for it to change. You know, Sheryl Sandberg, until she left Facebook, was second in command. I don't know everybody who's worked at Facebook while Sheryl was there, but I would be very shocked if there was not another individual who lost their spouse, who lost their sister, their brother, their child, whatever, lost someone close to them. And because of the position and lack of power they were in, they could not change that policy. And very similar to you, had to navigate situations that were not healthy, right? So props to Cheryl for realizing what she needed for her and her family and then walking into work and saying, this policy sucks, we're changing it. And also honoring the fact that like most of us can't do that. And so most of us sit and have to navigate that in the most horrific ways. The policies are horrible.
Yeah. And let's see, it's a good point because like even when I think about being a senior leader in the last job that I had, like if I would have lost someone there, I still would have been able to get time off because I was a senior leader and my boss would have been like, sure, you know? But yeah, I think you're right. Like you have to be like for the people that are like out of college or, you know, they're right out of college or their early career, it's like they're the ones that suffer the most, right? And so yeah, that's exactly what happened. And that's why I went out and I don't regret it. I do feel like it's I can just be who I am and I can really, I felt like I was holding things back. I felt like that performance conversation I was talking about, I felt like some people were intimidated by my intelligence. I do. And I have people that would say, well, Tanya uses these words like long words. I was like, what? People, it got weird.
My spirit is screaming racism. My soul is screaming in my Aunt Ruthie, you know, in my grandmother Ruthie voice, jealousy is the root of all evil. That's what it's giving. That's what it's giving.
Yeah. And then one of them apologized to me at one point. But yeah, it was, they knew they were wrong. But yeah, but it again, I think it's, I don't hold any resentment. I can't hold, my mom would actually don't hold any hate in your heart. I moved on. I just think that it's just unfortunate because there are so many talented people that a lot of companies will lose. And I mean, I think was it last year that we saw that a record number of Black women had started our own companies because we can't do this. It's just too much.
I'm, you know, in defense, I'm still in it, but now I only work with people who know really who I am.
Right, right.
So then when people go to them and they're like, Lexi said this in a meeting, the conversation with me usually is like, did you really say that? And I'm like, probably. And they laugh and go, okay. But again, that's a privilege to be able to really navigate your career in a way where it's like, I can work for people, like I'm choosing the manager, not the company.
I think you mentioned it.
So what is the hardest part about walking in your purpose? We've talked about the beauty of it, the liberation of it, but come on, everything in life has a yin and a yang. What is the most difficult part about consistently doing this work?
I think you mentioned it, capitalism.
Mm.
Our societal values are in a state of crisis. Just waking up every day and seeing that Congress can't pass bills. And it's hard because like you mentioned earlier, sometimes you just got to do what you got to do some days. But I do believe we can have a healthier society. Again, if we could all think about what our role is in that. And actually do it. But yeah, that's the hardest part is sometimes you just got to do what you got to do. And it's hard because again, it seems like there's no end in sight right now.
So in closing, what's the hope? What's the positive message? Why should people do the work to figure out their purpose and then to unapologetically walk into it?
I will tell you that, you know, even though I shared a couple tragic stories, I am the happiest I've ever been in my life. I think I'm the most content I've ever been, even though the environment around us is chaotic. I'm still, and I think that the reason why is because I am walking in my purpose. And, you know, I recently started getting a little bit more involved. I was appointed to this leadership council, and we're advocating for issues of small businesses. And it's really neat to be a part of that. And I'm learning a lot about, you know, how the government works, how to move things forward. And so it's so worth it. It's so worth, I mean, that's really what we're here for, right? We're here to number one, to serve and number two, to really just continue to make our society better while we're making ourselves better. And so there's a lot of also mental health benefits to that. I'm not saying that's the only thing, the only reason why, but there's a lot, oxytocin, you know, you also get connected to really wonderful people. And so, yeah, I mean, I think we all should want that, because if you don't have that, what do you have, right? If you're going through the world and again, you're just making the paycheck. And I know some of us have to do that, but just take a little time and look up and say, what is bigger than me that's driving me today? And how can I connect to that? And just ask yourself that. And again, you have a much better compass on life.
So friend, where can we find you? How can we support you? What are you working on? What can we do to uplift you up as you uplift other people up?
Yeah, so you could find me. So I run a company called Change Coaches, changecoaches.io. It's a leadership development firm. We work with leaders and prepare them to lead in today's workplace. I also wrote a book called Leading Below the Surface, How to Build Real and Psychologically Safe Relationships with People Who Are Different from You. You can get that anywhere books are sold. And you can find me on LinkedIn. And I'd love to chat with people about this. Again, Lexi got a little personal in here today. She got a little deep. I mean, I like getting deep sometimes. I wasn't prepared today. So you might have got a little more personal side of me. But yeah, this is who I am. And I'd like to have deep conversations and vulnerable conversations. So definitely get in touch with me on LinkedIn. And so should be want to have a real conversation about something.
That's one of my superpowers, LaTanya. Like I don't have to bring liquor to the table to get people to spill.
No. The tea. No, you okay? Don't. You don't. I'm like, dang. You came in hot.
But regardless, I really appreciate your vulnerability and I appreciate your honesty, because I do think that having candid coffee chats like this actually really does help people. Number one, to show that everyone is actually a human, even though, you know, our really beautiful, sexy LinkedIn profile pics
right.
may not say that we are, but yes, people are human. And to really just deconstruct these life lessons in order to live just happier lives. Because I think that if you can live a happier life, then you will treat people better in your life. And then they can live a happier life.
Right.
And then people can stop oppressing people. Look how that works.
Right.
Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Lexi.
You can listen to You Can Sit With Us episodes on Spotify. For more information, visit our website, lexib.com, and our LinkedIn account at LexiB. And make sure to follow our podcasts on Instagram @SitWithLexiB. And don't forget to subscribe to our Spotify channel.